You're listening to Rocklin World Radio, heard around the world. Hence, Rocklin World Radio.
It's not just radio, it's Rocklin World Radio. RocklinWorldRadio.com. To spark lively discussion about a variety of everyday topics from the viewpoints of spirituality and metaphysics, this is New Perspectives.
Good evening. My name is Paul Lamb. I'd like to welcome you to this evening's New Perspectives with Rory Pinto and our special guest, Judy Thomases. This evening, Judy will be talking about her brand new book, which we're all very, very excited about. And Judy, would you like to begin tonight by telling us about the new book that you've got?
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Barely. Hold on.
Barely.
Having a little bit of technical.
Hold on a sec.
Okay.
Go ahead, Judy.
Is that better?
Yes.
That's better.
Sounds better, sure, yeah.
Okay.
We're having technical difficulties.
Well, let me introduce the title, Judy. Excuse me. The title is Wisdom Applied is Life Mastery. I love that title, Judy. The subtitle is You Are the Universe Waking Up. And how are we doing? Are we waking up?
Well, we have to wake up in a special way, and I think that's what we'll be talking about. About a decade ago, began to receive messages, channelings they're called. In other words, as long as I invite, I get almost word-for-word dictation, and that has resulted in not just one book, the first book, which was called Wisdom's Game, but another book as well, and that's what is being called You Are the Universe Waking Up. So the book is based on these receptions from spirit guides, advanced souls who are, I guess, trying to bring us up to speed, really. We're living in a world that's not the easiest right now. Anybody just needs to tune into the news and knows that fact. So,
Judy, what's an advanced soul? What is
an
that?
An advanced soul is, as I understand it, a consciousness that has already experienced enough about being a human being. Dealing with life and physical existence and the challenges and pleasures about that, and has kind of moved beyond, is more elevated in wisdom, able to see a perspective that we can't from our perspective, and given the purpose of teaching us or helping us to evolve.
It sounds like that soul has a certain degree of non-attachment. Would you say that's accurate, Judy?
Yeah, I think from the place that these messages are coming to us, attachment has to do with desires, it has to do with emotions, it has to do with needs and wants, and once the consciousness goes beyond the experience of that. That's all connected to being a person, an individual. Once you get past that, you're not even in this realm. You're really beyond the three-dimensional universe, not in time and space anymore. So it's almost not relevant to talk about non-attachment, because that is pure consciousness. That's not going to be attached to anything physical that we would be wanting. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, understands the experience. In fact, is in the place, as I understand it, spirit guides are in the place of more connected to creation, to the level from which our physical expressions come from. So you have consciousness kind of guiding or directing us who are here as human beings, as people. Can I tell you a little bit about, you know, how I didn't
yes,
even know
do.
Any of this?
Please
because
do.
Because I'm, you know, just another person here and going through the same kind of ups and downs and the same kind of things that anybody else would. Well, as I said, about a decade ago, I was sitting at a desk and journaling. I was really going through my own stuff, my own angst, trying to process it. And I heard these words. And the words were basically explaining that what we're doing here is playing a game that we have forgotten or never been taught, and that the game is taking place on the inner level, the level of the soul, and that the challenge that we face is to bring ourselves up to wisdom, to learn wisdom, and thereby to find the tools and the methods, the strategies and the perspective to win our soul game. What do you win? You master life. You learn how to co-create. You calm yourself down. You release more energy. You realize that joy is a choice, not something that waits for somebody else to give it to you, but that you can access. And when you complete all of that, you are in a place similar to what's being described in The Secret, in which you start co-creating, you start manifesting your desires in alignment with the universe. So to sum up why I can even speak about any of these teachings is because they have been given to me piecemeal. I'm not the only person who is receiving. There are many people who are getting channeled messages. And the gist of it is that through mediumistic people like myself, the human race is being propelled or pushed to become wiser, to wise up, that we are kind of creating circumstances where we're backing ourselves into a corner. We've got to fix the world. We've got to figure out the game. And so these messages are coming through. So whatever I'm going to be talking about tonight, that was book one, and then I'll be talking a little bit about the second book. That's the level that it's coming from, direct word-by-word teachings. And that's primarily the way that I can even talk authentically or say whatever I have to say about it.
Are there winners or losers when you describe things as a game, or how does that work, Judy?
Well, let me put it to you in, you know, practical, realistic terms, Rory. Say something is going on in your life, and it's upsetting, or it's challenging, or it's circumstances that aren't exactly what you would prefer. You can be in a mindset, you can see it as stuff happening to you. You feel like you're being victimized.
Mm-hmm.
Things are unfair, and you have lousy luck. So that's a mindset, and that is not a winning mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Can you change it? Can you shift on a dime? Can you have a different philosophy, a different set of methods to change it in the moment that you're experiencing it? Yeah. You can reframe what you're telling yourself about what's going on. You can see yourself as the designer of the circumstance. That, in other words, you chose it.
Mm-hmm.
You can use very clear methods to move in an opposite direction from that negativity. And you can then change your vibration. Mm-hmm. Is that winning? Yeah. Because you're going to get happier. You're going to feel more powerful. The outer circumstances are going to change and conform to your new perspective, the name of the show. And you're going to start feeling like a new type of person. So that would be the way the game is won.
And as your inner world changes, so it changes your outer world. I mean, that's essentially what wisdom teachings are about, it seems to me, yeah?
Right. Well, to be a little bit more descriptive, I had finished the first book, Wisdom's Game, and begun what any author does, which is to try to market it and get it out there and do signings and everything. And then this same inner voice, this process, started to say to me that there's more to be communicated. And I was very resistant. I remember saying, you know, no way, go away, I'm too overloaded here. And the voice was saying to me, in effect, I think even used these words at one point, make time. So I was very insistent that another body of messages, another book, be communicated and written down. And that was book two. So book two really came about on the heels of book one before, you know, a few years ago, and was something that was almost pushed through. And that's because book two, which is You Are the Universe Waking Up, is explaining in depth how the world is created, how we as human beings use thoughts, what goes on in the mind, in the brain really, and how we structure the world from that. So it was almost like the second part of the teachings. They're like a set, you know. It's like first you have to understand that you're in a game, and then you have to understand that more deeply to learn that you have the power and how you can change that in your mind, how we all can do this, how thus the world can be changed at a very critical moment in time, a time that we seem to be facing this real important choice as human beings, that there's definite understanding that needs to take place in order to start seeing how the mind structures the world. And then even more than this, by the time the book two proceeded and continued with these concepts, what was really being explained was the nature of who is speaking and who is hearing. Who is the you and who is the me? Mm-hmm. And then it really it took off to the point where I have to say that it was a profound experience for me to grasp what was being said. We are being taught in the second half of book two the very concept of where the brotherhood is, what the brotherhood is, what we are vis-a-vis spirit. And that's an amazing understanding, because there is no, it's like taking the understanding beyond the barrier of the limitations of being a human being into this realm of co-creation, this realm of pure consciousness from which everything begins. So it was really an amazing experience personally.
One of the points that that you gave us, it says, even miracles can be birthed by combining logic with creative desire.
one of the great messages.
That's a beautiful.
Isn't it?
That's fantastic.
One of the great messages here is that we form our thoughts, and thoughts build our reality. And we form our thoughts out of, very often, out of our beliefs or out of our past experience. And these are just
Beliefs can be beliefs that have been just been handed to us.
Yeah.
Culturally.
And a lot of times, I'm sorry.
From culture, from family, from the earliest.
Religion.
Religion from the earliest days. The beliefs aren't, you know, we've got them, but.
They're a mixed bag. Cause, you know,
they're a mixed bag. The book is, You Are the Universe Waking Up is saying that thoughts create reality, and we don't give much thought to thought.
Right.
We don't examine what thought is. We just kind of go on, you know, on our momentum. But once we stop and really examine what thoughts are, which is covered in the book, we start to understand that thoughts can be expansive. They can go beyond what's known, beyond what we've learned is doable. Thoughts can be just either a tool or can dominate our existence, or can be a beautiful option in which we pursue or explore a whole new avenue by expanding thoughts. And they're also explaining to us, the Brotherhood of Lightworkers, that we all come in to life in between two givens. We enter the stage of existence between having a passion to see something through or realize something as unique human beings, and also having a dilemma. This was covered in Wisdom's Gain, the first book. But in the second book, it's really explained that the passion is what's wanting to be realized or explored or brought to light, brought into manifestation. And it's by using your heart's desire, your passion, not letting your thoughts dominate that or sap energy from it or say it's not doable. That's how miracles are created, by using the tool of conscious thinking in service to the passion that was driving the life to begin with, that brought you here.
So,
and
by understanding... Go ahead, Jordan.
I was just going to finish the thought that if you use it in that fashion, if you work with the energy of your passion and be more conscious in your thinking process, in other words, really master your thinking process, be aware of the formation of your thoughts and what they contain and what kind of energy and what kind of limitations and obstacles they're setting up for you. If you do that, you can bring into being what you're meant to.
When you say what you're meant to, do you mean kind of what you your passion, your however you want to say it, your as you were saying before, your true passion, or if we came in here for I don't know if we came in here for a purpose or not, but we certainly do have passions that can very easily be deferred through circumstances or...
Well, see, we what we are as people, we are energy beings. We are the universe wanting to discover things about itself by creating creatures that inhabit three-dimensionality, time and space. Then these creatures evolve until they're self-aware. That's us. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always a passion that drives that experience. So the universe wants to explore something unique. Okay. What's unique? Well, we'll create a Paul Lamb. The universe throws off an energy pattern that contains challenge and passion and goes by the name of Paul Lamb or Rory Penfield.
Mm-hmm.
And then in order to explore that, it's got a natural a natural path that would reveal its essence, the very bottom line, beyond your personality, beyond who you identify yourself as. Deep down, there is some truth or essence that wants to be expressed. That's who you are, in truth. That's, you are a fragment of the universe exploring that. But we don't know that. We get lost in this illusion of day-to-day life and emotions and thoughts and negativity and whatever. So we stifle the passion and we mask it and it gets covered up and we don't pursue it, or we do it in fits and starts and then stumble and block ourselves. And anyhow,
isn't that part of the growth curve?
It is,
in a way.
And that's why I'm calling this wisdom applied is life mastery. Because as you come awake and you realize how your own thoughts are taking you away from the perfect expression of who your essence is, you stop that.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the power of gaining wisdom is to not block yourself, to align yourself with this flow of energy that just wants to play, just wants to get out there and do its little dance.
Where does fear fit into all of this? Because that seems to be the hugest impediment. And is it, maybe it's something that arises from false evidence appearing real, or misinterpretation, essentially a kind of negative thinking. You know, which comes first, the fear or the negative thought that then needs to be recognized and
that's a key question. That's a key question.
We're losing you for a second, Judy. You're breaking up.
What's that?
You're breaking up. Could you repeat that?
Okay. We tend to react to things and go into emotion about them. We can go into a negative emotion very easily by what we're telling ourselves about the circumstance. If the life is threatened, then it's a survival mechanism. But often it's anxiety or resistance or just plain being afraid to step up to the plate.
Judy, can you hear us, Judy? We're breaking up here. Judy?
I'm hearing fine.
Okay, but your voice was breaking up, so every so often we can't. It comes out every third or fourth word. So
we can say that either we have a problem, or we can say, well, let's realign our thoughts around this. See, I'm going to use this event. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. we're going to use exactly what's happening and apply wisdom to it. Either we are at the mercy of transmission and weather patterns and problems.
And are you on your cell phone?
Yeah, you want me to get on a landline?
It probably would be best.
Okay.
But wait. When we take the break, we'll switch over.
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Is this better?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm on a landline now.
Excellent.
Sorry about that.
So you were...
Anyhow, you can frame an experience as though it were a problem, and then you have thoughts that come, that follow it, that follow along the line of what the problem is and how it's affecting you and what your reaction to it is, and you stay in your fears or negativity, or you can shift it, you can reframe it, and you can see something of value in it. You can frame it as though you are the designer of it. Why did you need to or want to participate in that experience? What can you get out of it? How can you change it then and there?
So, okay, I'm a radio co-host talking to an esteemed and wonderful guest who starts to break up, and now I can feel my fear come up that, oh, my God, we're going to lose the audience. It's going to be a bad recording. The show will go down the tubes, and I can feel my body starting to tense and fear arising. So
anxiety and negativity.
Yeah.
So one of the important things is to recognize and identify when you're in an emotion. And the Brotherhood says that by shifting out of it, then and there, not waiting, you know, for 2 days later to analyze it, but while you're in it, if you can shift it, then you have done something as powerful within yourself as winning a battle or a Nobel Prize, or their wording was very dramatic in the book about the value and the power of doing that, being able to do that in the moment.
And obviously that's an ongoing thing, so that's an ongoing challenge.
Right.
To get ourselves so that we can more easily shift the emotions.
Shift the emotions, and after a while, it becomes like anything else that you practice.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get yourself more quickly out of your emotion, we all have the emotion, we're all human beings. Nobody, unless they're really walking around with a halo on their head, and then even then we just read about Mother Teresa having self-doubts and stuff. Nobody escapes being human and not having bad days. But it doesn't have to be a bad day, actually. You can get it down to a bad minute. You can learn how to do it so well that you find yourself in the emotion. And then instead of having a train of thoughts after that emotion that, you know, talk about it, tell yourself all of this problem, you construct your thoughts differently.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're coming out of your experience and flowing more quickly. You're getting rid of your obstacles more rapidly. You're aligning yourself vibrationally with allowing. And that's very powerful. The more you do that, and the faster that you do that, you gain power. You feel as though you're in charge of your life. Now, let me say one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even good emotions, which you really want to stay in, being inside of any emotion and letting it run the show is not mastery. So the idea is to recognize that even elation, you can use a thought to remove yourself from that, because you don't want to be in a place where your emotions are running you. You want to be in a place in this world where you are mastering emotions so that you can master thought.
And yet, without emotions, we'd be robots. So what is the purpose of emotions in this grander scheme of things?
Well, the purpose of emotions, as you said, is to make us feel things, to make us very involved with the concept of this three-dimensional life. You know, it's always explained as being an illusion, and it is. The Brotherhood in this book explains it very well, that it's the brain that is constructing the illusion that we are participating as separate selves in an existence. But really, everything is taking place on the inner level, and the dialogue between ourselves, our innermost, and what we see as the world is exactly where the illusion is taking place. There is no external world. When you study quantum physics, you realize, hey, there's nothing but energy here. There's nothing but energy being exchanged, dancing, vibrating, going back and forth or hither and yon. It's nothing but a dance of energy.
Judy, could you give us a couple of examples of how we can shift emotion, you know, along with awareness, and you know, some examples of how we can do this? Because obviously, we're all working with this one.
Yeah, we are.
Constantly, right. On an ongoing basis.
Well, this is, I have to slightly digress here to say that I took all these teachings from Book 1 and Book 2 and all the other awareness that I had gathered over the years and synthesized them into a wisdom system. And this is part of four levels of advancement. And the second level is where you begin to work with these emotions. And there are techniques, there are deliberate techniques. For instance, one of them is to have a beautiful memory that you revisit in your mind, a time when you were very happy and content and relaxed, and it could be even an imagination. It doesn't even have to have been a real event. And you practice going there when things are pleasant and not stressful, so that when you're in a difficult moment, you can actually shift to that momentarily. You can do a breathing exercise and regulate your heartbeat with it and calm yourself. That will take you out of a difficult emotion. You can apply humor. In tarot, the card that everybody's frightened of, the devil card, the chains on the two people are loose, and the understanding, the wisdom of that card is that humor, or what is called mirth, M-I-R-T-H, is what dissolves evil. So anytime that you feel yourself, you know, threatened or stuck in a difficult situation, see if you can make light of it. And that's the application of something kind of like looking at it as the human comedy. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, you know, here I go again.
Mm-hmm.
These are just some of the methods. There's a technique I'm not that skillful in. But we recently heard a talk on it called, you know, the emotional freedom technique, mm-hmm. with the tapping on certain body points.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of ways to stop yourself in the middle of a negative emotion. So mm-hmm. important to mm-hmm. do this so that you don't find yourself being helpless mm-hmm. in the face of your own emotion and then the thought stream that follows it.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thought stream, this is an interesting thing because, you know, like in Buddhism, there is this mindfulness practice that has you working, following your thoughts, paying attention to your thoughts. But as you just said, if I understood you correctly, that actually emotions precede thoughts. And,
well, yeah, many, many times. I mean, in life, very often, nothing too much is going on. So we can have a lot of creative thoughts, and those are just things that we generate out of thin air, mm-hmm. through our wonderful brains. And then we have philosophical thoughts, or we're thinking about the dry cleaners or whatever. And, you know, that's different. That's thoughts arising. Thoughts arising and originating from the self without anything propelling them. But when an emotion precedes a stream of thoughts, and the stream of thoughts are very disempowering after that.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the methods should be applied mm-hmm. and the waking up should start to take place. Because what's amazing, what's so exciting, is that when you wake up, everything changes. You begin to apply this wisdom. And it's sufficient at first just to know you gave yourself the dilemmas that you're in. You design them. And then now some of them are coming into fruition. And so you're facing your own dilemmas. And so you stop thinking, oh, poor me, and you start applying this wisdom practice.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens afterwards mm-hmm. is everything shifts. You no longer see yourself as this small, helpless creature in the universe. You see yourself, you almost identify with the designer of your story.
The playwright of your drama.
The playwright of your drama, right.
Son of a
and being so, you become more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You become more aligned.
Mm-hmm.
When you become more aligned, your life follows flow. In other words, things just appear right on schedule, or you didn't even expect it, but something scoops you up and carries you further to your goal.
And
so you become like very buoyant by this. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they disappear on schedule, even though it might not be your schedule. And that's the curious thing, as you digest certain losses and disappearances, so to speak, people getting off the bus or whatever it is that might seem traumatic in that moment, but as you digest it and come to terms with it, there's often, you know, there's gold in that particular adversity, and it takes a while to trust
processing.
That process.
I think so. I think processing your experience is a very important part of being human. We're not robots. We're not artificial intelligence. We have to have these feelings and then process what we're going through. But, you know, Wisdom's Game is saying that suffering is part of the design, because does anybody change when everything is happy and pleasant?
Yeah, I've often wondered about that myself.
Does anybody do a bit of work or transformation when everything is delightful?
Right.
You know.
That irritant is catalyst, is what you're
The catalyst for gaining wisdom is some sort of suffering. But the idea is not to stay in it.
Mm-hmm.
Not to enlarge it or give it power over you. The idea is to process it. Now, some experiences are a lot more painful. They're greater in what the value is to you. But if you would ask probably every human being, being who you are now and having gotten there by going through whatever you went through, would you, if you could do it again, would you not, you know, would you want to not have that experience? And they'll say no, because that experience made them who and what they are. There was great value in it, even if it was deeply painful. So we're not ignoring human experience or rejecting its value or meaning. It's just that, why did you need it? What was its reason in the design? Why did you need your karmic predicament? What did you get out of it? What is the value of what you got from it? And the value is always in the accumulation of wisdom.
Yeah, and through the engagement.
Yeah. Mm.
What is wisdom, Judy?
That's a very key question also. What I understand wisdom to be is the accumulation of understanding of what in life brings, what in life is sweet and what is bitter. And as we accumulate experience of being human, eventually we realize, well, if you put your hand into the flame, well, that hurts. Don't do that again. So that's like common sense, which is a form of wisdom. If we try out an experience and it proves to be beneficial and brings us more love or gain, we've accumulated a kind of wisdom about it. Eventually, what we begin to see is that when we can do something for another, the sweetness of that is immeasurable. And then the greatest wisdom is the open heart. And that is when you see other people as yourself, which is what they truly are. So there's accumulations throughout lifetimes of what about life feels good or does not. Eventually, there's a refinement, and the refinement gives you the means to navigate your life and tells you what is valuable in the experience of life, what's important. And once you gain a piece of wisdom, nothing and nobody can take it away.
Mm-hmm.
People can run their belief system by you, and you might accept it if you don't have anything to compare it against. But if you've tasted an experience and have come out of that with this kernel of wisdom, this pearl of wisdom that you know about it, nothing that anyone says can really diminish what you know, what you've learned to value or not value.
Mm-hmm. There's information, there's knowledge, and then there's the wisdom that comes from applying the knowledge. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I think knowledge is when you learn about something in your mind. You gain a bunch of facts. Wisdom is what it feels like to actually engage in it. Wisdom's like a quality that becomes part of the very fiber of your being and and can't be removed. Why would you want to lose it? You would never want to lose it. There are people with certain brain injuries where they can't remember what they were told or what happened yesterday. And they're like doomed to repeat it again and again. And it's a doom, not because anything bad is happening the next day or the following day, but because without being able to accumulate meaning from that experience, it becomes meaningless. And just accumulating knowledge after a while it's not enough. You won't know what something really, truly is just by accumulating a lot of knowledge.
Or facts, certainly.
And along that line of the sense of repeating oneself, there was the sense of moving forward and backsliding. We're right here around the New Year's time, and obviously people make all kinds of resolutions this time of year. The health clubs fill up momentarily. And
With very good intentions.
And, you know, I believe we all have these experiences where we have these very good, powerful intentions. And frequently, ba-boom, we're sliding backwards again. And, you know, obviously part of that is the process, or all of it's the process, I'm not sure, but...
Well, everything is created, the whole world, the whole life experience, everything that you feel is inside you and outside you is created in the mind. The mind builds this reality with thought, structures of thought. The mind is talking to itself about what it's going through or about what it wants, what it can or can't get, and so forth. So I would come back to the idea that we have to become awake about what world we're building for ourselves. You know, everybody first wants to know what's in it for me. What is the point of it for me? Never mind, you know, global whatever. What do I get out of it? So what you get out of any of this is the idea that you begin to take charge of the creation of your reality. And if you make resolutions but your thoughts fizzle, your enthusiasm fizzles because your thoughts are like, you know, I'm not going to do this today, or you let an emotion override a positive thought, and that emotion has a need connected to it.
Such as
I have a resolution to diet, but I'm feeling lousy, so I'm really going to pig out on chocolate ice cream. You didn't come up with that thought, but you let your emotion override that you were going to go to the gym today. So you built your reality based on unexamined thoughts and unmastered emotions. It's hard work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is not an easy game. Well, so nobody promised the Rose Garden.
With the chocolate analogy, it's kind of like, I know I need to lose some weight, but right now I want it. You know, and it just, and that's what drives the show until it doesn't. And, you know.
Well, that's what makes you human, too. Mm-hmm. So, unless, you know, if you didn't succumb once in a while, or, like I said, have a bad day or a bad moment, you would be, you know, a cyborg or not a human being. And the whole idea is that we're engaging in this process of life. The universe wants to explore this process called life. It wants to explore the idea of being an aware, intelligent creature who can examine this stuff, can look within, and also is subject to foibles and flaws. And what does that result in? It would be easy to just create machinery that would, you know, follow resolutions, New Year's resolutions. Wouldn't be any challenge. The universe won't learn from that. The universe wants to understand what it's like to be alive with all that it entails, including emotional weaknesses, mm-hmm. or even good emotions. You know, I don't want to put down emotions because it's what makes us human.
Mm-hmm.
But to be conscious about them, to really examine them, to feel, something is driving my desire for chocolate ice cream right now. What is it? You know, what's going on? What's bubbling down under the surface there?
Mm-hmm.
Can I identify it? Can I shift it?
Well, so often it's just, I want to be happy, and it's a quick fix. I notice, you know, you want that expansion, that that release of tension that, you know,
mm-hmm.
so many substances, you know, which are great in moderation, but, you know, can do you in, too.
Now we're talking about all kinds of substances available to us that mask emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And the masking of the emotion, or the spackling over of it, mm-hmm. the repressing of it, and so forth, isn't really the fix. It doesn't shift your power. As long as you are in the place where you feel you feel at the mercy of your own emotional goings on, you're not going to be the master of life. Once you practice and make that shift once in a while, how can we put this? Like, something's driving the need for the chocolate ice cream. You're feeling not so good. You didn't have a great day. You had an argument with your spouse, or your boss, you know, was difficult, or you didn't get something that you were waiting and longing for, and you're just, like, in a down place. And you recognize it, and you say, I don't have to continue this thought process. I'm going to change it. I'm going to change it in the moment because I can. And then you redesign it. You say, well, in my own movie script, I'm going to write my character as something else happening, a miracle, or a changeover, or a lucky coincidence is going to crop up. So this is just a momentary, a little glitch, and soon something new is going to happen. Well, you're changing your energy in that thought. You're changing it. So what was driving the need for the quick fix is not going to remain. You're going to struggle with it momentarily, and then you're going to find yourself in a different place. And the different place means a different energy pattern.
I think the struggle is something that, you know, we don't always appreciate in terms of this issue. The effort involved, it's an art form, so to speak. The practice, you know, we have great, powerful insights and epiphanies. However,
well, it's a waking up.
Yeah.
It's a waking up to the fact that you have this power to do this. That it's not normally taught. It's not something that we come into naturally. We don't know that we can do this. Did you ever learn this in school?
No.
In crude ways. Knuckles being wrapped by rulers, perhaps. Detention.
To shift your thought process or something?
Right. I
will not, spank the dog 100 times on the blackboard. I mean, those were attempts, crude as they were, to certainly to shift behavior and to an extent to shift thought, although the emphasis was far often on behavior.
Behavior, right. That's a key point, because your thoughts could have gotten more negative then. I hate that teacher.
Yeah.
Your thoughts, or
not,
I was bad. Your thoughts could have gotten, it could have worsened following that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we were just never taught as human beings, hey, we can become aware in the moment of the power of our minds to create our vibrational state.
Mm-hmm.
We can do something about it. Wow. It's just absolutely thrilling and exciting to realize that you can change this. I had a personal experience. I won't go into detail, but somebody really disappointed me. And I was in an emotion that I would describe as being hurt,
mm-hmm,
for maybe a day. And then I woke up, I woke up, meaning while I was in it, I realized or put two and two together, and I said, wait a minute, this is the wisdom game. I don't have to be in this place. I don't have to stay in this thought. Yeah, the person acted the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
I do not have to remain in the emotional state. So I shifted it. And I said to myself, this is a good test for me. If I'm going to walk my talk, I better be authentic. I better shift the dynamic. So I did. And it instantly changed everything. It changed everything about my inner experience, my inner process. What happens then is that you feel more powerful, and, the dynamic changes so that the person who you gave power to hurt you, they don't have that power anymore. Why? Well, you didn't do anything to them. You just changed something in you so that the dynamic changed. A person can't hurt or disappoint you or anger you or whatever if you don't allow it, if you change the design. So then the universe actually came to my assistance and offered me a very pleasant experience around this person, only because I didn't need it anymore or desire it or react to it.
Hmm. Now, that's an interesting statement you just made there, Judy, that the universe came to you. So by shifting your energy, something else took place.
Yeah.
A new outcome was possible? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's a more advanced place in this wisdom system. This concept of what the Brotherhood is teaching us is that we are the universe, that there is not an inside and an outside. There is only one energy system. And your mind, your thought process, is what aligns yourself with flow or puts up obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
And if you understand that so long as you remove the obstacles, emotional or negative thought process,
mm-hmm,
if you get yourself out of your way, the universe can flow through you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the universe's assistance is really your own higher self's assistance or alignment or
mm-hmm,
flow.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't even have to, I'm thinking along the lines of manifestation and
mm-hmm,
intent right now,
mm-hmm,
but you only have to just be. You only have to get out of the way of yourself. You have to allow your greater self, which is the universe, to flow through your smaller self, which is the construct of you, in quotes. And when you get yourself out of your own way...
How do you personally do that, Judy?
By getting myself out of this storm of negative feelings and all of the subsequent stuff that follows it. Mm-hmm. And I do it, I have to do it again and again. There is no quick fix. There's mm-hmm. no instant mm-hmm.
right.
cure.
Not gone forever.
It's not
it's
magic.
It's a case-by-case
yeah.
basis.
But every time I do it and I see these, you know, instant results, mm-hmm. it makes it more real.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it more and more understood. So then I'm more likely to do it again and again.
Mm-hmm. You get better at it.
It's really yeah, you know, you get better at it.
We have been, the world has been under some hard aspects recently.
Mm-hmm.
It was a tough Christmas season. There was a Saturn station.
Mm-hmm.
And also Mars is retrograde until late January. So we're not in the easiest energy patterns in general. We're being challenged. And what is the challenge about? It's to grow, to awaken, to become aware of how we contribute to reality and how we can shift or change it. And the work must be done individually first in the personal consciousness where we live in the place of me or self or I.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can expand and we can realize that even under challenging times, our inner changes will change our outer experience of what comes to us, what's presented or offered to us. And then that in turn, if enough individual selves do that, then the entire world, the experience of the exterior, mm-hmm. must change. Because it'll be like a group endeavor, a group effort.
And a critical mass, in a way.
Yeah. So, I think that the teachings are explaining the connectedness between everything, the connectedness between what goes on in the so-called interior and what goes on in the so-called exterior of our experience, and how we, the awake human being, can have control or power to shift that right at that juncture.
So this is a roadmap, these books, and what would you say is probably the most key principle that to apply to really realize it and make it come to life in everyday reality? If you could leave us with probably the key most thing to practice.
Yeah, we've got about a minute left, yeah. Judy.
Okay, and I also want to tell people that if they're interested in book two, please contact me. It's $25 for book two. It's $100 for the wisdom system per se. And they can contact me at starspro@aol.com. And what I would leave people with is to say that the idea that thought is what forms the entire world, your own world and the greater world, that is what gives you power and mastery, is what aligns you and brings you a cascade of new opportunities, is what can create the miracles of your world. Thought, the mastery of thought, is the most important understanding from this book.
Hmm. Well, I think that was a great show. That was great, Judy. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you, guys, and I'll see you all soon, and please, everyone can look up wisdompath.com and find out a little bit more about this.
Yes, and Rory, would you like to give us your contact information?
Sure, you can reach me at Roarstar, R-O-R-S-T-A-R, at AOL.com, or give me a call, 212-874-4384.
And I'm Paul Lamb. Thank you very much for listening to us. We're coming out of Rockland World Radio in Nyack, New York. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.